You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027. This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Global stocks fell across the board today, bucking what we saw yesterday. In fact, almost a mirror, but in the opposite direction, as oil prices dropped and warnings of the worst global recession since the 1930s from the IMF really underscored the economic damage that's being done by the coronavirus pandemic, much of it inflicted by lockdowns around the world. European stock markets faltered. We saw the pan-European stocks down 1.9%. Much of the damage felt by oil companies, Total, SA, Royal Dutch Shell and Sasol all sinking. And that's as we saw benchmark Brent crude down 4% to around $27-$28 a barrel. That's after the International Energy Agency today forecast a drop in oil demand of 29 million barrels per day in April. So you can take your OPEC plus 10 million barrels and you still got a huge glut, so much so they don't even know where to store the stuff. We ended down 3.4%, giving back almost all of yesterday's gains. Really bear market stuff, this. Wayne McCurry, portfolio manager at F&B Wealth and Investments, and Murray Gunn, head of global research at Elliott Wave International, have your view from the market. Evening, chaps. Wayne, oil has gone gonzo. It's actually a massive gift for South Africa when demand picks up again.
Yes, but of course, when demand picks up again, it means the world's picking up again, which probably means the oil price will pick up again. So, yeah. Look, the oil price is a function of the global economy, so I don't think it's going to stay low if when the world's economy picks up. And of course, no oil producer can survive even medium term with the current oil price, no oil producer. So as you correctly said, in this immediate lockdown phase of the world, there's 20 million barrels a day sloshing extra. Believe me, that can disappear quickly because demand, at least supply, will just dry up at these prices.
That sloped up quicker than your patrons will at the opening of the local pub down the road when we're allowed to go out of our homes and halls again. Murray Gunn, how are you viewing the oil situation from your vantage point? It really is one of those stories that, as Wayne said, we're probably not going to see the full benefit from because as soon as we start to see an uptick in global growth, the oil prices will probably start trending in the other direction.
Well, our models certainly suggest that oil has got further to go on the downside. Elliott Wave International has been bearish of oil for many, many months now before the crash, and we see that continuing. Conventional analysts look at economic numbers and oil numbers to try and determine the stock market and the commodity markets, but we realise that the markets are driven by human beings, and so that's why we analyse human behaviour. And our models show that historically bear markets have consisted of at least three waves, and so that the bounces we've seen in stock markets from the March lows are well within normal retracements for the second waves of bear markets. And if you look at that, how that rally has proceeded, volumes declined on the rally, and defensive sectors have actually outperformed cyclical sectors. And they're both good clues that the rally has been counter-trend, meaning that another large decline is looming that should take us well below the March lows.
And looking at the market today, Wayne, I guess one looks at the smart money in the bond market. There was a decidedly risk-off tone today, and we saw that the yields on bonds are dropping even further, which does tend to indicate that the smart money is not as optimistic on this little mini-rally that we've been experiencing at the moment. I know we need to look slightly beyond that, but with the IMF's report from yesterday, it does look like at least a year before we can start talking about economic growth again.
Correct. I mean, whatever the outcome is, you've lost at minimum a year's growth in output. And we've probably lost at minimum probably 3 years' growth in company earnings, if not 4 years' growth in company earnings. But that has happened before. Every bear market, we've lost so many years' growth of company earnings and so much GDP. What obviously is different this time around is how quickly it's happened. I mean, you've never had the world economy go from a +3 estimate to a -3 estimate in a month.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the U.S. sales data came out earlier on. I mean, they've had probably only the start, an 8% fall. This never happened in 1 month. So what is different is not the extent so far. Of course, no one knows the future. But it's not the extent so far, it is the timing, it is how quickly it's happened.
Yeah, it's been a precipitous fall, and it's once again highlighted by dislocation. Murray, if you look at what's happening in Wall Street versus Main Street, in the U.S. economy in particular, 16.6 million people have lost their jobs in the U.S. over the past 3 weeks alone. U.S. banks seriously jacking up the requirements for mortgage approvals, which can't be great for the housing market over there and therefore the consumer. And the best performing subsector of the S&P year to date, drum roll, is the retail index. So that's the market surely dislocating from economic fundamentals.
Well, certainly the markets go their own way, and actually it's the stock market that leads the economy. That's our view in our models. And it's interesting, you know, with central banks around the world, like the Fed in the US, cranking up the printing presses in March, it's actually a remarkable rhyme of history that 300 years ago to the month, in March 1720, the infamous Scotsman John Law decided to double down on his money printing in an effort to save his Mississippi scheme bubble from deflating. So now we've got central banks like the Fed are counterfeiting money in an effort to stave off the inevitable deflation of the biggest debt bubble in history that's been building up for decades. You know, economists call the money printing that's going on at the moment MMT, or modern monetary theory, but it may as well stand for the magic money tree, as far as we're concerned, because that's what it is. You know, the Fed is using these fake dollars to buy junk bonds and toxic loans, so it's loading its balance sheet with assets that may decline to zero if our outlook is correct. Now, it may be that the Fed may not go technically financially bust, but with this moral hazard policy, the Fed's already morally bankrupt. But of course, you know, no one's arguing that governments have a moral obligation to help businesses get through the imposed lockdowns, but that shouldn't be an excuse to bail out companies that were highly indebted and flying too close to the sun.
Yeah, and I mean, that opens a whole debate around share buybacks in particular. But Wayne, firstly, the big change for me and on Murray's point is the Fed went from sort of being the buyer of last resort to, over the last 10 years, really leading the market. It's become the buyer of almost first resort. The market has really become very addicted to the Fed's money printing.
Yes, it has. And of course, we don't know the outcome. We don't know the eventual outcome of this. It is unknown, because the true danger about printing money, and this is obviously all of what's happened in the past, is that it ultimately leads to inflation. And we've seen that in many, many instances. However, when the money was printed in 2008, there was no inflation around at all. So, there was a phenomenal amount of money also printed in 2008. I don't think we're approaching that level yet, but we probably go to that level and maybe even surpass it. For 10 years, there was no true cost of that, but we don't know the outcome of printing money. We literally don't know. But in the immediate future, in the medium-term future, this obviously is going to help the economy and help markets, but the true cost of printing money, it might be horrendous, but we actually just don't know. But it is probably a long way into the future if it does arise.
Yeah. And why are we seeing something anomalous like stocks rising alongside a safe haven like gold? It's not every day that you see that happening, Murray. And it does tend to indicate that market participants are hedging because they're not sure of the outcome of all of this money printing.
In our view, the only hedge in deflation that we see, because it's debt deflation, that the money printing won't overcome the psychological effect of debt deflation that's just starting now. And you know, so cash really is king. You know, our models anticipate that the declining gear markets will continue in the US and Europe for some time, and that the 2008 lows will eventually, you know, come into focus. So on the way up in stocks, it was FOMO, fear of missing out, but in the bear market, we think it's going to be FONGO, you know, fear of not getting out. But, you know, there's always a bull market somewhere, and for us, that bull market is in cash. And so don't be fooled by just taking the interest rate return on cash, which is obviously minimal at the moment. So if the stock market is in a bear market, you can turn the chart upside down, and you can see the value of your cash growing as it's able to buy stocks at cheaper and cheaper prices. Bob Prechter's book, Conquer the Crash, has much more information to help everyone survive and thrive in the bear market.
That's some pretty interesting considered advice, I would say. In this environment, holding on to cash has often got a fund manager, a portfolio manager fired. I've spoken to a few who, just before the crash, had mandates with high net worth clients and said, "What have you done? My portfolio has been shifted largely into cash. We had a pretty good year on the JSE last year. I'm going to shift everything." And boom, then everything blew up. Who would want to be a professional money manager, Wayne? Very difficult. Who would have called the coronavirus induced and oil black swan when we're all talking about Iran and the Middle East and the US in January? I mean, that feels like such a long time ago. But I want to end off talking about the share buybacks issue, and it's been prevalent all over the world, not just here, but in the US especially. And I think the US airline sector has really become the proxy for this whole buyback debate, because it's being bailed out now. But the big question is, did the executives over there plow huge amounts into buybacks to bolster share prices that would in turn result in better bonuses and compensation for those executives? Do you think we might start to see the end of the share buyback? Could it be regulated out of existence?
I don't know if it's going to be regulated. Remember, why you buy back shares is that you believe the shares are trading below their intrinsic value or their inherent value. And by buying back the shares at very cheap levels, you ultimately boost earnings per share if you are right in your assessment that the shares are trading below value. Now that's capitalism. That's buying something that you think is cheap and is going to go up in value. But I don't know whether it's going to be legislated against them. Remember, exactly the same story in the 2008 crisis was that you paid all of these massive bonuses and then the tax man's got to come and bail you out. So I don't actually know the outcome of the share buyback story. But obviously, a lot of the share buybacks have happened on debt. And that's what's catching the companies now.
I think, Murray, the one thing is certain, that independent of which side of the debate you take on share buybacks, management teams are going to think twice about supplementing returns through buybacks going forward.
Yes, that's correct. And I think that's all part of the process of deflation that we see. And that part, that is driven by a turn into a negative trend in social mood from the positive trend that has been driving the multi-decade bull market up until now. So as the negative trend in social mood continues, then we should see people becoming more conservative in their actions and less willing to be able to do things like share buybacks. Yeah.
Murray Gunn, Head of Global Research at Elliott Wave International, and Wayne McCurry, Portfolio Manager at F&B Wealth and Investments, with your view from the market.